Da 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 da. Ba 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 ba. Back by popular demand, I got 2 votes, and then there were 0 against me. That makes it a popular vote. Da da da
Not
da
really.
Da. Okay.
Yeah, well, you know, there you go. First of all, welcome again to Yelling at Gaseous Anomalies. I'm your host, Matt Ross, and I'm here with my co-host, Michael
co-host
Pontone.
Co-host, my captain.
And I'd like to thank those of you who voted. That's both of you, Brandon and Kara, for the very, very intense question, should Mike keep singing or should I use the canned music that I spent money on? But,
we love you, Kara. Don't default us.
The two of you have it. But also, you did say use both, so later
yes.
We will. But anyway, welcome again to Yelling at Gaseous Anomalies. How are we doing tonight, Mike, besides technical issues, as per
yes,
usual?
Yes, astonishing. Okay, yes, no, very, very good. For once, I'm going into the week not with the with minimal Sunday scaries. So I'm hopeful that this will not be
good.
A complete disaster of a week like every other week of my life. So we can pray.
Well, you know what would probably help you is if you got some, maybe some mental health care from a guy on the Tantalus colony.
Because
tonight,
yeah.
We're visiting Dagger of the Mind.
Yes.
Actually, it's an interesting psychological sort of story. Did you get the Google blurb on it, or would you like me to entertain the kids with the story from the official press release from NBC from 1966?
Here, you go ahead with that while I pull up the Google synopsis for Dagger of the Mind. By the way, it sounded
sure.
A lot like you said Jagger of the Mind. Which would have been an interesting...
No, it's dead, no.
Okay, I'm just saying.
It wasn't Mick Jagger, wasn't
it?
It
would be a good solo album.
Probably jazzed up. It would be all right. But it says, an escapee from a penal colony on another planet triggers a USS Enterprise investigation of alleged maltreatment of prisoners in Dagger of the Mind on NBC's television network. In color.
Hey, apparently there was also a Columbo episode in 1972 called Dagger of the Mind. Fascinating.
Well, you know, it is a it is not like a made up phrase. It actually comes from the author who was a big fan of Macbeth, talking about a dagger of the mind is in Macbeth. Now, I'm not a big Macbeth memorizer or reader. I assume you are deep into the lore of Shakespeare. You've read it all and you read it every day. Is that
well,
right,
Hamlet is my favorite, but I know Macbeth pretty well. There was a great adaptation of it by one of the Coen brothers, only one, a few years ago with Denzel as Macbeth. That thing rocked, man. High recommend for anyone who's down for a little culture and quite a bit of entertainment.
Well, I might look into to that one. I mean, it's, you know, it's interesting as a concept. I find that it's difficult, like all of us had to been forced to read it here in the U.S. to reading Shakespeare. I find it dense and tiresome. And for some odd reason, I had to do Julius Caesar twice. I do like that one, actually. But here we are. We are heading towards a rehabilitation colony to... treat the criminally insane.
I'm
weird as we see the flying. Yeah, I think we both could use it after what we do during the week.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting how Kirk is in love with the idea and saying he's in love with Dr. Adams, or at least what he's done with the rehabilitation system. Oh, yeah. Even
Sorry.
Your dogs are excited by it.
Oh, boy. Excuse me, everyone.
The rehabilitation colonies are now more like resorts. And Bones comments that it's a cage is a cage. But it actually really first starts off where they're trying to beam down drugs. And the putz of the guy inside forgets that he has to ask permission to beam it down. And we get our stuff coming on up with a box not marked top secret, do not open. Which is actually going to someplace interesting. It's going to the... penal research group in Stockholm, I guess for Stockholm Syndrome or something like that. I thought that entire little sequence where they're beaming up, Kirk reprimanding the guy, and I actually thought that was very interesting. It felt like a real-life moment on a ship Any thoughts of that, or did you think it was too TV cliche? Or
no, I thought it was good. I liked the little, you know, I always like things that represent the naval capacity of the ship, and you know, captain coming in, giving a little pointers, light reprimand, moving on. Good leader, obviously. Yeah. By the way, I am confused about a number of different things. Do we explain how the doctor got in, like escaped and got into that box? And also, what was supposed to be in the box?
What's in the box?
You know what? It's stuff for Stockholm. Maybe it would, maybe it was, cookies. I have no idea, but it is a good question. How did he get inside the box? Who allowed him to do that? Maybe he distracted people, or he was distracted, or someone just wasn't really paying attention. Maybe it was he snuck in there in advance. You have to use your own imagination as how he could get in there. Considering that it's a highly secure environment, he's wearing a gas mask of some sort, so he knew he was going to be in there a while. So I would assert he was there for a bit, and the facility's own security systems just were not able to find him because they weren't looking. But then, of course, he attacks the transporter chief when he comes on out, and when we come back from the commercial, I also like the crazed look the guy has. I think that's actually one of the more interesting things in this, because that actor does come back later in another Star Trek episode called The Omega Glory. That is Morgan Woodward, who usually played like Western cowboys. I really enjoyed his performance. I think his performance really makes this entire episode and forms kind of like a B story. It's interesting that they suddenly you could see again that naval-like environment. Yeah, they already got doing security throughout the ship. They're locking down areas, looking for the guy after being told that from the Tantalus colony the guy's escaped. It's kind of it made me feel like it was really there. Did you get that impression while you're walking around the Enterprise, or actually being taken around the Enterprise on this little adventure so far?
May have an intruder aboard. All sections clear for mission 3.
Intruder aboard.
Hey, you're from engineering.
Bridge, section C, deck 14.
So I think that we've already seen in the very, few episodes that we've encountered better searches around the ship for missing or person of interest. I mean, we had the Salt Monster episode, we had Evil Kirk episode, and, Salt Monster episode, we saw weird stuff on a spaceship. We saw Sulu with the weird Venus flytraps,
The hand plant.
The hand plant. And right now, this episode is good, better than the last few nonsense nothing stories that we've watched. But I am missing the rich tapestry of supporting characters, which I am assuming at some point stabilizes into a steady cast of, the Magnificent Seven.
Yeah, well, Robert Justman, the producer, was saying it cost him $850 an episode for James Doohan, so they were trying to cut corners, so they cut him out of several things. Same things with DeForest Kelly. They didn't play all 26 episodes. The only ones that were 26 episodes were Shatner and Nimoy, but of course they're the lead stars, Shatner obviously being the top star in this situation. But that's just, I guess, the business that these people are in, Yeah. It's, you got to make a buck and save some cash. When we do see Uhura later, and already we've got our crewmen's uniforms, our karate gis that are colored different things. I actually do like that where one of the guys said, "Hey, wait a minute, your engineering," as the guy's walking around the ship, and I'm like, "Yeah,
yeah, with crazy eyes,
Dr. Crazy Eyes." Yeah, he evades all security and knocks the security guy out on the bridge. That's where we go from there.
I like that it was not just a cat and mouse game the entire time. I mean, I was like, okay, we're going to spend the first third of this episode just trying to find him. No, I like that he just went straight to the bridge, identified himself, and gave up. That was kind of cool. And those geese, they make kind of appearances in TNG, you know, in kind of like the beige yellow thing that B4 wears, right?
Sort of.
Yes.
Sort of. But here they just look a little ridiculous. But I do like the fact that they differentiate that the officers wear like the shirts with either with no braid, meaning ensign, or braid, meaning lieutenant and higher. I think it does add something, but a name tag would be nice. But they weren't thinking of that. It's just a TV show.
Right. And Chief O'Brien, he wore a regular thing. He just didn't have any pips because he was not an officer.
That's true. Right. They actually, in the Next Gen, but that's a discussion for a series from now, he did have pips at first. He didn't really actually have a name for a while. Right. Then they made specialized NCO pips for him, if you look
at the bars.
Deep Space Nine. Well, they're kind of. It's got like a, almost like a sergeant stripe on it.
Got it.
But anyway, getting back to this, Morgan Woodward as Dr. Van Gilder? Oh, ah! That took a day. That was pretty intense. He said it took a day and a half of shooting for that. I actually like his performance a lot. It was really like, you believe there's something blocking him, and it's a little bit too quick for the Tantalus colony to say, yeah, is he okay? Everyone all right?
Yeah, they didn't seem too concerned about hushing anything up or getting him back quickly.
Be a good way to hide a crime by hiding it right in front of you. So, yeah, it's fine. What is interesting is Tantalus, the colony, is named for a portion of hell in Greek mythology. It's supposed to be down in a dark place. The son of Zeus is sent there.
The original... Go on.
I was going to say the original writer, Simone Winselberg, was obsessed with the mythology. He actually wanted to call Dr. Adams Dr. Asgard, but Tantalus stayed.
Tantalus yes. was a person.
Well, Tantalus was, that's where they were going. Oh, that's right. You're right. That's the son of Zeus. He was put in the deep pit of hell. But Tantalus also comes up later in Mirror, Mirror, and you'll find out why.
You're jumping all around. Tantalus was a man. Tantalus and Sisyphus were commonly...
None of the,
you're not listening to me.
Go ahead.
Tantalus...
No, I'm not going to listen.
Yeah. Sisyphus would always push a boulder up a mountain, and then it would come crashing down. Tantalus would always attempt to eat food or drink water, and it would always nudge away from him as he went to reach for it.
No, but I'm talking about the thing where they're putting Zeus's son into hell. I could swear they were talking about it also with Tantalus. Tantalus was the son of Zeus, who, condemned for his crimes, was made to rule the deepest part of the underworld. So, yeah.
I don't... we're thinking of different mythologies, but go on.
Well, that's Greek mythology, so, you know, I mean, I'm not that's what I'm talking about. So, but that's what this colony is named for, and it is in a pit.
You are so wrong. The Enterprise wrong is... amount, all over. I just pulled up the wiki. Tantalus was a Greek mythological figure most famous for his punishment in Tartarus. Tartarus was the place, Tantalus was the man. For tricking the...
Tantalus was the son of Zeus, who was condemned for his crime and made to rule the deepest part of the underworld.
I'm going to keep reading. For trying to trick the gods into eating his son, he was made to stand in a pool of water beneath a fruit tree with low branches, with the fruit ever eluding his grasp and the water only receding before he could drink.
Well, I'm just telling you what I'm reading from our Star Trek history book here that was talking about how Tantalus was the son of Zeus.
That's right. Matt gets all of his history of the world through a Star Trek filter.
Well, you're Googling it, so what are you talking about?
It's Wikipedia.
And also, if you Google it, Tantalus in Greek legend, son of Zeus, or Timolus, ruler of Lydia, and the nymph of Tethys Pluto, and the father of Neboia and Pelops. So there.
There's infighting and yelling at gaseous anomalies. That, and you know what? We're just gonna take out our batleths and our motleths, and we're gonna go at each other and see who's standing at the end.
Through that, I'll shoot you with a phaser at distance. But that's the way the writer
without
wrote
honor.
It. And I guess so, but I'd be alive, right? So I guess I'm a true Cardassian at heart. But Tantalus.
I do love the Cardassians.
So there you go. Wait. So they get back to the colony, and they have to deliver Dr. Van Gelder, who's having a hard time dealing with being taken back. What I found interesting is that McCoy comes to the bridge, basically calling BS on Dr. Adams, saying like, yeah, he just had an experiment. He just had a bad experiment. You should come back and, you know, unless you know of someplace that was better than our top-notch medical facility to come back there. I did like the fact that there was a raised suspicion. And you can see also the conflict between McCoy and Kirk over regulations on having to do an investigation.
Yeah, and I know that you said that this is pre-Federation, but it does, it's like the very first time, you know, Gene Roddenberry, he was always like, hey, we're going to be past humanity, is going to be essentially good and kind of a beacon of hope and humanitarianism for the rest of the universe. And listen, we're 10 episodes in and already we've got 9 episodes in, and what do we see? We see that there are a section of humans who are not great. And it gives me a little bit, talking about Echoes of Future Trek, gives me a little bit of Section 31 vibes, just a tad of, you know, kind of covert humans doing wrong things. Also, pop quiz hotshot. I can think of one instance again where a human-based penal colony is mentioned in Star Trek series. Do you have any idea where it is? Okay, that would be, it was mentioned in an episode of Deep Space Nine when Dr. Julian Bashir's parents come to DS9 and it's revealed that Dr. Julian Bashir is genetically modified a la Noonien Khan. So.
Yes, that's, but that wasn't a mental facility.
You're not getting me. I'm not saying a mental facility. I said a penal colony, because at the end of that episode, the Federation gives the father 2 years in the penal colony in Australia.
Yeah, but that's the same place where they had Tom Paris from Voyager. That's the same penal colony. So there you go.
Oh.
So, yeah. And that episode with Voyager, I believe, predates the episode you're talking about when they start to ruin the Bashir character in Deep Space Nine. Also, just as an interesting note, when we're getting back to Dagger of the Mind, they beam down the set that you see in the remastered version is different. The actual scene was a reusing of the Delta Vega matte painting from Where No Man Has Gone Before, but they took out some of the tanks. I like this version where it's like just an opening in the middle of nothing, getting on its way down to its pit to hell, so to speak, where it's express straight to hell.
Good imagery.
Like I also like Dr.
Is that
Helen
a Frighteners
Noel.
Reference? Right. Was that a Frighteners reference, by the way?
No, it was actually more of an Aliens reference. The
oh, sure. We're expecting to hell. Going down.
That's right.
Hudson, sir. He's Hicks.
That's right. You have a question, Private? Anyway, did we meet our next character? We see Dr. Helen Noel, and she says, you remember me? It's actually an interesting thing is that Kirk is actually more professional here than she is. Obviously, she has the hots for Kirk, but he's like, listen, let's just do our job, shall we there? I found that kind of interesting because her entire character is like making moon eyes at him and pretty much anyone else. What did you think of Dr. Helen Noel?
Cutie patootie, man. I mean, that's, again, they had some good casting on this show because these women are attractive by any time period standards. If she was on a show in 2024, people would be going gaga for her. I'm fascinated that the writers could not come up with anything other than a Christmas party because it shows that they're writing this fast and loose. I'm sure that they said Christmas party, question mark. We'll put something else in later because how lame is that? And then they just, they just kept it. They just went to shoot it. So,
yeah,
I guess the Federation atheists are still having horny, drunk Christmas parties in the 23rd century.
Nothing wrong with a corny, drunk party at any level. But I do like the fact that that we have her as a professional, a medical professional in this. I think that's actually kind of interesting. She has both specialties in psychology and penal rehabilitation, which is an odd character to have aboard a starship. I mean, I guess that they have a generalized knowledge, which is good. When they get down there and the door opens immediately to Dr. Adams, you see another TV regular over there. That is James Gregory, who you would know better from Barney Miller, if you saw that later. The drunken, not really drunken, but kind of relaxed police inspector. I liked him, and you were commenting on the weird costume he had on. His gi, he had on a hand holding a dove and a sun. You were calling it the hippie vibe. What did you? What were you
definitely looked like a cult. You know, it made me think of something that would have been imagery from Children of the New Dawn, from Mandy, or whatever the heck fire Charles Manson called his group. He didn't call it the Manson family, I think. I think he called it something else. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, you know, this is the time, what, 1966? The dark side of the hippie movement is already starting to kind of rear its ugly head. And, you know, I mean, it's obvious what this is, right? It's mind control, not through an authoritarian, fascistic viewpoint, but from this kind of new age viewpoint of, oh no, we're only trying to help you, it's fine, you know, we're trying to make you better, we're trying to slough off all these negative feelings. So I am really fascinated that even back then, when the new age movement was so recent, they were you know, they were sloughing off against it. Now, by the way, did you so you don't know what MK Ultra is? It doesn't ring a bell.
I'm sorry, which one?
MK Ultra.
You mean the marijuana derivative?
No. MK Ultra was a top secret U.S. program which basically tried to make assassins. It was the concept that maybe you could give someone a tremendous amount of LSD and
that would then make them.
Yes, kind of. Absolutely. Jacob's Ladder, Tim Robbins, great film. Danny Aiello, one of the best versions of an angel ever put to screen. So it was the concept that if we give them enough LSD, maybe that's the key to implanting post-hypnotic suggestion so you can have sleeper agents assassin. It didn't work. It just fried the brains. And in fact, Ted Kaczynski, I think, had some exposure to this, which is why he was so anti-authoritarian and anti-government and sent his letter bombs 30 years later. Anywho.
But in the movie Jacob's Ladder, it means you get a job at the United States Postal Service. Go see Jacob's Ladder, everyone. It's a good one. Yeah, that's where it is.
Oh, yes. High recommend Jacob's Ladder, one of the few films on the planet that is both horrifying and beautiful.
I wouldn't call it beautiful. It was fine for what it was. It's
got a beautiful ending.
Because I'm old. But it's all right. But it's an interesting ending. I'm not going to ruin it for you. But let's just get back to our episode here.
Dagger of the Mind.
We meet our first inmate, Lethe. She's a little bit out of it, wouldn't you say? I love my work.
Ah, Lethe, come in. Lethe, this is Captain Kirk and Dr. Helen Noel. Lethe came to us for rehabilitation and stayed on as a therapist, and a very good one, too, I might add.
I love my work.
I really love that when she comes on in. But I find it bizarre is that just one step before that is that the Dr. Noel wants Kirk to call her Helen. That's a little bit unprofessional, I thought, a little bit. She's a little bit too into him. And he's like, look, come on, do your job. But yeah, I love my work, and we get a tour of the facility. We only see it from a little bit, but you see Kirk and Spock.
I bet to see all two plywood.
Hey, is
rooms.
That plywood?
Amazing.
It's plaster there. They got some craziness going on all over the place. But as they're giving their tour, Spock and McCoy are talking to Dr. Van Gelder, who's really having more and more psychotic episodes, and he can't say his name. He can't do anything, and every time Every time
there they go again.
Every time they have a an actual content that they or information they want to get, he strains in the hardest way, like to say whatever it is he wants. I actually really enjoyed that. It makes you wonder just what the hell is going on down there on that rehab center, you know?
Right, Matt. And again, I'm going to jump to the end here, man. Once again, we've got, at least this time, we got a much more interesting premise that is not ignored. I mean, okay, we get this is a medical facility. They're doing these mind control experiments. Why?
Well, that's the thing that caused some friction. The actual writer who's here is identified as S-Bar David. He actually changed his name to a pseudonym because he was getting pissed off at Gene Roddenberry. In fact, Gene Roddenberry saw the complaints of the writer, and I have this really well-written memo from Gene Roddenberry. I'll read it for you. Roddenberry scribbled Please. Across the writer's letter with two words, fuck him. So, yeah, it went... they weren't too in love with him. Roddenberry actually hired this guy, Winselberg, because they needed writers. They couldn't write everything. He actually came from Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea and Lost in Space, which Roddenberry did not like.
Hmm.
In fact, a lot of people didn't like it because it was too jokey and too kid-friendly. And gee whiz, a robot, which was the exact opposite of the concept of Star Trek. Roddenberry wanted to make an advanced humanistic approach to sci-fi. Lost in Space wanted to make Sunday night family time. So I think that's, you know...
Yeah, well, at least Lost in Space had some interesting things with explanations, man. Again,
not really. You know, Planet of the Vegetables. I give you Planet of the Vegetables.
I looked in. I know Planet of the Vegetables, and in fact, I have watched that. I've watched the making of. I remember.
Yeah, really,
guys.
You remember Dr. Smith buying getting flowers for the robot?
Just
I don't
listen.
Know.
Listen.
Okay.
The producer went to the writers and was like, I read the script. What the hell is this? And the writer was like, I'm having very bad writer's block. You either do this or you got a new writer because I don't have anything else. And so they did it. And if you look at the, if you look at that episode at certain times throughout the episode, the actors turn away and cover their mouths because they're laughing. They're breaking.
I don't blame them, but I'm not going to rewatch that episode now, and we're never covering it. I don't like Lost in Space. I also don't like the S&M Lost in Space with William Hurt or, you know, it just doesn't do it for me.
That movie was a miserable, dark, weird fest of, I don't know.
A lot of black leather.
Bullshit.
But the TV show on, I think it's on Netflix? I think that's they had the Lost in Space there. That was interesting, but it always seemed to have the same story. Everyone's in trouble. Mom figures out everything and saves everybody while Dad gets mad
also,
and says, I wish I had a gun.
I didn't like Parker Posey at all as like not Dr. Smith, just some imposter weird woman.
She actually kills Dr. Smith. Spoiler.
I know.
Sorry.
It's so
it's
weird.
Terrible.
It's so strange.
And the robot, I'm glad it's over. It doesn't even, it didn't.
Yes.
But anyway, so you wanted, what did you think of Eli, the guy in the front goes, Kirk, they go over to see where the neuroneutralizer is, the thing that destroyed Van Gelder's mind or has harmed him. That's what they're looking at. That's where Dr. Adams says, this is where we had the accident. And just that technician, Eli, who doesn't blink the entire scene. I even pointed it out to you. I said, look at the guy in the back. He didn't blink at all. It was very disturbing. He's just standing there, goes like, oh, yes, very simple controls. Turn this one and then that one. And if you heard our preview, that's Eli getting more and more forcible, saying, like, you will forget everything you have heard. Very disturbing. So obviously there's something that's going on, but what is the motivation here? What do you think the motivation is? If you were going to guess.
I don't know.
Well,
I don't know. They're just snidely like smiling evil. They're not even, at least if they were like, hey man, you know, we got to break people down to nothing and then rebuild them. We're going to make a race of of people who know nothing but peace and harmony. That'd be something. It's like, yes, sever his brain.
What's really bad is they cut out like an essential scene where Dr. Adams reveals his motivation, which is like he feels
what
that
was
he
it?
Was he feels like he was sent away despite all of his hard work and helping other peoples that he wasn't given a just reward, and he was sent to this place. It's kind of like a devil's island, which the character actually mentions. That's one of the hints towards that scene that's actually cut out. He actually is doing this to try and get revenge and use people to then do something to somehow escape. It's not really well thought out. I will say, though, the acting through it is great. And it's kind of an interesting story. Even without that motivation, you could say the doctor has gone crazy, but I wish they did add that little bit. But in the meantime, you find the doctor can squeeze through ducks. You see that she has the hots for Kirk by making him have a more of a sexual, romantic relationship from that Christmas party, even though nothing happened. I thought that was kind of interesting overall. Did you have any thoughts as to that? Or could you live with the fact that you weren't given an answer?
I'm starting to expect it in this series because they seem to love their premises, but again, they just don't seem to give a crap about explanations or motivations. And inherently, that's going to be one of the worst reasons why that's going to be something that really sinks writing at all times, because you don't understand the motivations of your antagonist. If you don't understand the motivations of your antagonist, you're missing a deep part of the story.
That's quite true.
You know, when we talk about the best villains in comic books for everything, right? I mean, generally, a lot of people point to Dr. Doom. You know why? Because his motivations are very clear. He wants independence for his nation. He wants no one to mess with him. And he wants to kill Reed Richards in order to eventually get his wife. And you know what? Here's the thing. You kind of would be like, it might be better off to live in Latveria than the United States. Because this guy is a genius, and ultimately, he's kind of into, like, if someone screwed you over in a contract, he's smart enough to know who did the wrong thing and punish the person who screwed you over, right? So
well, that's true.
The point is, with these guys, what's going on? They got no motivation.
Well, that's true. I mean, I also find, that aside, if you take the other things in portions of it, the episode is something that you can watch while folding the laundry. Or just sit down and turn your mind off, like being attacked by a neural neutralizer. I would
great technology premise again, and also like very, very cool premise. Like again, I really dig the whole. It's a concept that has come up in lots of bottle episodes where you go to an asylum and you're starting to slowly realize that something's wrong. And you know what would have been a good twist? The classic, even if it was the classic twist that had been done a million times, that the inmates are running the asylum, that the inmates overpowered the guards and put all the doctors in charge in the neuroneutralizer and scrambled their brains. And we think the people who are in charge turn out to be the inmates running the place, and they're all homicidal maniacs.
Well, that would have been interesting, except that didn't actually happen. Isn't that in that Batman film with the Scarecrow?
There's a really good Tales from the Crypt episode with John Lovitz where that happened.
Yeah, with his wife, Morgan Fairchild, whom he married. But, that's when it's actually the liar on Saturday Night Live. But I also...
No.
I do find it interesting that the doctor is able to torture Kirk with that device and make him, I like that scene where Shatner's actually laughing like he's losing his mind. I thought that was pretty well done. But the most important part of this entire... There is one thing out of this entire episode that's most important, is we have the beginnings of the Vulcan mind meld.
So yes, that is the big old amazing thing. Yes.
It was interesting to watch how it was done, and Spock assuring McCoy that he's not going to affect him. It doesn't work that way. It's by touch. And he's able to pull out of Dr. Van Gelder the suppressed memories of what's actually going on. And unlike what Dr. Noel sees, it is a chamber of horrors down there. that Dr. Adams is doing this. Again, though, the motivation, like you said, there is none. I think that extra scene would have added just a little bit to it. It's like a three quarters of a story, but it's a little bit, it is very incomplete.
I do love the introduction of the mind meld. I can't believe that it wasn't Roddenberry. It's such a genius idea. And it reminds me of kind of like, you know, the concept between like low magic and high magic,
right?
In fantasy writing, like, you know, Harry Potter is high magic. You can make food disappear from anywhere. You can kill people with a single clarice. And George R. R. Martin commented, that's difficult because then it's like, well, why isn't everyone using that all the time for everything? And then low magic is what you have in Lord of the Rings or Game of Thrones, where, you know, Gandalf might be able to create some light and he might be able to talk to an eagle. But, you know, when the stuff goes down, he takes the sword out like anyone else.
Yeah, why couldn't they just fly an eagle to the volcano?
They've talked about that many times.
I know.
The Eye of Sauron would have seen it coming, and they would have had enough resources with the Nazgul's fell beasts. Okay, whatever. to take them down. They had to go in stealthily.
Stealth eagles.
Whatever.
Anyway,
the point is, I do like... What I'm trying to say is that I like the concept that it was... Oh, they were like, okay, this character's going to be telepathic. But they were like, and it's going to be a gentle telepathy. It's going to be a... You have to get right up to someone and you have to essentially have them cooperating with you in order to do it. We have seen a forced mind meld, though, in Star Trek Undiscovered Country, and it was pretty rapey.
Yeah, that is very rapey. This one, it was like the first time they've done. I actually liked it. They even adjusted the music to have a more of a,
yes,
a kind of a mystical sound to it. It's actually reused music. I will tell you that I liked how that was able to calm down Dr. Van Gelder and inform the captain of all the problems that were actually happening down there on the planet, on the penal colony. Eventually they figure it out and they, our heroes, do stop Dr. Van Gelder in one of the more simple ways, basically turning off the electricity. I thought that was pretty funny.
Genius.
But it was also kind of gross, because if you think about Dr. Noel pushes a guy into the exposed electrical circuit, so he gets fried to death. I do like that Spock beams down, and he says something that's actually followed up on. He goes, come down, with an armed security detail that is actually there. A lot of times shows will say, come down and meet me down there, and they'll just concentrate on the person that's there, or they'll just have even if it's not a sci-fi show, they'll just have the one character who says, meet me there in 20 minutes, and they never show the rest of the gang in this. Or gang officers. In this, you actually saw security officers holding the facility personnel almost in custody and against the walls. I actually enjoyed how that kind of just played itself out. So that's what I took away from it. Anything else you think you want to mention from this episode?
Could have used the security guys having little shields like they do in the movies occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
I really like those chest shields. past that, no. I mean, again, cool resolution, basically a good old-fashioned, not cliche, but, you know, archetype of having the evil device used against him. But, you know, it's the fact that they were just evil, meh. I don't know. I don't know how they thought they were going to get away with it. And by the way, what happens to the crazy doctor on the Enterprise?
The crazy doctor, Van Gelder, at the end, he actually gets beamed down back and takes over the facility. They cure him either through the mind meld or some whatever, because he actually says he disassembles the neuroneutralizer. That's also where Dr. Adams gets his end, too. The device of his use is his undoing, where he sits there alone, and the machine empties out his mind, causing him to die. which is actually kind of disturbing when you think about it. His brain gets emptied out and he becomes useless and then dies of loneliness, which kind of also is kind of a disturbing concept. You know, no one really wants to say they ever die alone, even though that's possible for all of us. And the eventual end, you never don't die with others with you, or at least none that I've heard of. No one's come back to confirm one way or another. So it's a sad end for Dr. Adams. Dr. Van Gelder takes over again, and they go not so merrily along their way. But that's kind of disturbing, I thought.
Yeah, did you ever watch any Black Mirror?
Yes, I have seen some Black Mirror. I think I saw the first season, and yes, I did see the Star Trek tie-in one.
Oh, yeah, it was a good one.
The Callister.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. That being said, I'm not a huge fan of Black Mirror because many of their shows end the same way, which is kind of similar to the fate of this doctor, where, you know, you're just trapped. Technology interacts with your mind and traps you in some endless limbo.
Oh, that's the one with is that the guy in the bunker or something, or is that a Twilight Zone? Because it's very similar.
No, there was a guy in a bunker with John Hamm, I think. That was like that one. Yeah, but I mean, that happens in multiple of them. Like, even the one in the McAllister, too. He's just trapped in, is at the end, the captain is just trapped in that, like, nothing universe.
Right.
And it's assumed that his mind is going to stay there for a very long time, and his body's just going to starve to death because he's a lonely guy with no family to check on him. Yeah, and it's... Anyway, reminded me of that a little bit. But listen... I like a lot of it. Like you said, great opening, great premise, moved along at a good pace, didn't spin its wheels too much. Just needed, like you said, just one line, literally one line. I'm doing this because blank.
Well, can't have everything. I will tell you, yes, though.
It's still incomplete.
The director, McAvity, he says, I don't remember liking this show a hell of a lot when they asked him about it. And just also in a quip in 2013, Morgan Woodward, which is Dr. Van Gelder, says, my mind was made a vacuum by that neural neutralizer and I've never recovered. So he pretends he doesn't remember it, but obviously he does. I think that's actually kind of humorous. The only one thing I will tell you, the person who was most upset about this episode was Grace Lee Whitney. She was saying, there's Dr. Helen and Owell. That's supposed to be me. I'm supposed to be in there. And in fact, it originally was written for Yeoman Rand. But the writers and Roddenberry said, well, wouldn't it make more sense to have someone with medical knowledge to go down as opposed to the captain's assistant? And that's why she.
What happened? And where was the Nurse Chapel?
Nurse Chapel is, I don't know. Maybe she's, cleaning the shuttlecraft. I can't tell you where she is. Each one of these people costs money, and this series was consistently and regularly underfunded, so they had to cut corners as much as they could, and reuse whatever. You'll actually see the plaid pants of the inmates used again, and several other things. But still, you could still believe it's an actual place. But that's basically it. Do you have anything you want to else add to this? Like, what's your WTF moment is on this one? Or
WTF moment? It's a pretty straightforward episode. I guess just the crazy eyes. It wasn't a very bad... It wasn't a WTF. You know, I don't know. I guess the Christmas party. It's like, Christmas party, come on!
Yeah, but, you know, I think it's ridiculous that the doctor really wanted to put in that she wanted to have a fling with the cap, and he's like, yeah, keep it moving. I actually found that, again, everyone says that Kirk is a horn dog and will touch everything. That I would like to say is mainly from J.J. Abrams things and misinterpreting of the Orion Slave Girls, which isn't Captain Kirk, by the way. That's Captain Pike.
Not only that, they're basically just the main thing is that they, they're all about the women are into him. That's what they seem to forget. And hence they believe that he's some sort of, you know, girl crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lothario. Like, no, he's just an attractive guy.
You know what? I will tell you, there is another thing that's funny is that there's a really good parody, and you can find it on YouTube. Basically, South Park made an episode called Roger Ebert Should Lay Off the Fatty Foods, which spoofs this show. It's actually really worth it to see. I mean, it's almost a scene-by-scene thing where they meet Dr. Adams at the planetarium, and I'm going to put some of those quotes throughout this episode.
Hey, who are you?
Little Missy here runs the big projector for us.
I love my work.
But it's actually pretty funny to listen to it. And don't worry, Mommy and Daddy aren't fighting.
So, I get to be Mommy.
Thank you. Sure.
Thank you.
That's fine with me. All right. So you can take care of the kids, and I'm just going to go out and hang out with the guys. We'll do 1950s and 60s Mommy and Daddy. So make
yes, sir.
For me and get my martini set. Anyway, that's the way it is on this ship right here. Anyway, I think that's does it all for us on this episode of Yelling at Gaseous Anomalies. We'll see you coming up next on the next episode, which is the Corbomite Maneuver. It's something I've been looking forward to, and it's one of the best episodes of Star Trek out of all of Star Trek, and I'm really looking forward to that, and I hope you join us.
Live long and prosper. Had a great time despite the technical difficulties. Sorry that it was away for a week. That was my fault. And yes, Matt, thank you as always. Keep me on track. Give me the good insight into these and take me on the journey through time and space. That is Star Trek, the original series. We forgot to do a rating. I'm going to rate this so far as a 6 out of 10. Would have been a 7 out of 10, but for the fact that, there was no explanation, and that's like the fourth episode in a row where there's a premise and no explanation, which I'm starting to get a little salty about.
Well, I'm gonna have to agree with you. I'm going to give it also a 6 out of 10 for very much the same reasons. I will say, though, that from now on, we're going to see an upward climb on the stories, especially with the next one, the Corbomite Maneuver. It's always a good time. I like to keep you on track. And, I hope you all join us next time. Again, remember, if you like what we're doing here and you have any questions or anything, feel free to email us at yellingatgas@gmail.com or find us on our Facebook page. That's right, our Facebook page. And we'll see you next time at Yelling at Gaseous Anomalies. Take care, everyone.
Live bye-bye.
And prosper.
Dr. Adams! He got a full dose of the stars.
Yeah, with nobody around to say anything.
Can you imagine it, Stan? A mind emptied by that thing.